Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, April 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the president says a chemical attack in Syria crosses a line, but he doesn't say what he'll do.
It's very, very possible, and I will tell you, it's already happened, that my attitude toward Syria and Assad has changed very much.
The other major issue for the president, North Korea launching yet another missile. Will a rollback of EPA regulations be stuck in legal battles? Also ahead, entertainment news and movie reviews. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, officials from President Donald Trump on down have expressed outrage at the apparent chemical weapons attack in Syria and have suggested that retaliatory action is being considered against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's regime, either by a multinational response or alone. At a joint Rose Garden news conference alongside visiting Jordanian King Abdullah II, Trump said Wednesday that the attack cannot be tolerated.
When you kill innocent children, innocent babies, little babies, with a chemical gas that is so lethal, people were shocked to hear what gas it was. That crosses many, many lines, beyond a red line, many, many lines.
He didn't rule out the use of retaliatory force, and while acknowledging that he's now in charge, Trump laid some of the blame for the chaos in Syria at the feet of his predecessor, who famously threatened military action in response to a 2013 chemical attack in Syria, but didn't follow through.
Well, I think the Obama administration had a great opportunity to solve this crisis a long time ago when he said the red line in the sand. And when he didn't cross that line after making the threat, I think that set us back a long ways, not only in Syria, but in many other parts of the world, because it was a blank threat. I think it was something that was not one of our better days as a country.
In 2013, however, Trump issued a series of tweets in which he urged then-President Obama not to attack Syria. At the United Nations earlier in the day, U.S. Envoy Nikki Haley castigated the international community for its inaction in the face of past atrocities and seemed to suggest that the U.S. would act with or without multinational response.
When the United Nations consistently fails in its duty to act collectively, there are times in the life of states that we are compelled to take our own action.
Haley explicitly criticized Syria's chief ally, Russia, which has used its veto power on the Security Council to prevent passage of resolutions condemning Syria's use of chemical weapons. Meanwhile, Dr. Manzur Yazdi, president of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations that provides medical assistance to Syrians, talks to International Edition's Sarah Williams about the scale of Wednesday's attack in Idlib, Syria.
This is, you know, according to all our data from the past today, it's the largest scale, actually. We know this is we had in the past, you remember, the Ghouta in Damascus area and several other areas around Syria. But this time, you know, the magnitude of the injured and the dead is really higher than any other attack in the past. That's why all of us in shock, you know. So this is over, and it's not going to happen again. And suddenly, we wake up yesterday in this news. We don't have 100%, you know, real count. We're still communicating with our doctors inside Syria. We have the from Idlib's province, we have Dr. Khalid. He's the head of the medical office there in the Idlib, and they're still counting the bodies and how many people we have. It's about 100 people dead according to the data so far, and there's more than 500 injured affected by them. And the number is still going up because, you know, sometimes after a few dead people, you know, died or lose their life with this kind of chemical attacks.
Well, apparently the World Health Organization is saying that the victims appear to show symptoms consistent with exposure to a nerve agent.
I mean, that's we're trying to confirm that. We're trying to be very specific ourselves since we are experts in the medical field, and we train our team inside Syria to really, before we say anything to any media, to make sure we confirm it. We are doing that currently. And yes, because of the you know, the one-fourth of the people exposed died exposure. And usually it could be the organic phosphor or serine, but we don't have a confirmed yet. I mean, this is our initial guessing that this is, it could be the one that has been used yesterday.
When something like this happens, I mean, how can your organization try to help civilians in Syria, you know, withstand what they could be faced with?
That's really the first, you know, the most horrible thing. That we were in Geneva first. We started because we had a meeting in Geneva almost 10 days ago, and we were trying to reorganize. We have our board meeting from several countries. We are, you know, we spread on Europe and United States, Canada and Syria and Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, Gulf. And we have all our members meeting to look into the current and the future in the planning. And we have some plan, and we are frustrated because all the world right now, they're cutting down on the medical aid to Syria. And we have, you know, like a crisis currently without any attacks. We are not meeting the demand of the Syrian people, what we've been doing the last few years. And that's why we have, you know, a lot of pressure on us how to manage. And then we lost a lot of our faculty inside. We attacked. We have direct attacks almost on a daily basis to our hospital. Actually, we were in Geneva in the last Sunday, and we were just attacked. They attacked while we were meeting there, the Frembel Hospital. They put it out of work. And then in the last week, just 3-4 hospitals been attacked. And that's why we are talking about our team inside Syria being attacked directly and systematically. And then we come, you know, again, and we have this disaster, and our team has to respond. That's why it's a very, very frustrating, you know, and it's very hard for us to be able to meet this demand.
That's Dr. Manzer Yazji, president of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations, USA. Well, just a day before a scheduled U.S.-China summit in Florida, North Korea launched what U.S. Pacific Command calls a KN-15 medium-range ballistic missile into the waters off the North Korean coast. Pyongyang failed in a launch attempt 2 weeks ago, but fired 4 missiles toward Japan earlier in March. Centers for Strategic and International Studies Korea expert Victor Cha says it appears the North doesn't care about the timing of the launch ahead of Thursday's summit between Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping of China.
Defiant, intransigent, opaque, the North Koreans have really not seemed to pay any attention or care at all what the Trump administration or what the Xi Jinping administration thinks of them. They've been averse to any sort of high-level contacts with the Chinese. Many people think it's the Chinese that are the ones that don't want to have the contacts with the North Koreans. It's actually the North Koreans that don't care to have the contacts with the Chinese. And they are on a very deliberate pattern of military testing of their ICBM program and their short-range and medium-range ballistic missile programs to demonstrate to the world that they can threaten U.S. bases in Korea and Japan, Hawaii and Guam, as well as potentially the continental United States in the not-too-distant future.
Cha says it's not unusual for Pyongyang to try to upstage any event like a summit that might discuss its nuclear and missile programs. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Trump removes Bannon from the Security Council role. The Trump administration says no longer it's considering separating women and children at the border. Contentious cases await Trump's U.S. Supreme Court nominee, and a new space telescope to undergo crucial testing. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Trump recently signed a sweeping executive order that rescinds at least 6 Obama-era executive orders aimed at curbing climate change and regulating carbon emissions. Trump also lifted a 14-month-old halt on new coal leases on federal lands. And when the president argues that this will create jobs, my next guest argues the actions will lead to actually years of litigation as states and cities continue passing their own regulations for the environment, challenging federal policies. Jeff Gracer is a partner at the New York-based law firm Sieve, Paget and Reisel, the oldest environmental law firm in the country. Thank you for being with us. So what's your argument?
At this point, there's an executive order asking the agency to look at the existing rules. And the question will be whether they can make the case legally that the rules should, in fact, be rolled back, rescinded, or replaced.
But if you've got an EPA director that questions climate science and they're proposing cutting off funding for more climate science, wouldn't it be easy enough to put people in there to testify that agree with your stance?
Not that easy, in fact. There's a very substantial record that the EPA has made about the climate science. In its findings, it actually made a formal finding that greenhouse gases endanger public health and safety. So it's not just a question of putting in the testimony of people who don't accept the science. The Supreme Court held in a case that set this rulemaking off that if EPA determines that there is an endangerment, it must regulate greenhouse gases.
So in other words, a new EPA director can't just come in and arbitrarily make decisions?
That's right. EPA has to act in a way that's rational. It can't make decisions that are arbitrary and capricious or irrational or unconstitutional. And in prior cases where new administrations have come in to roll back environmental regulations, the courts have applied a higher standard of scrutiny and have been skeptical of wholesale efforts to roll back prior regulations.
If this is truly a human health issue, why do you believe, as an attorney that has litigated these types of issues, why would a president saying he wants to do good for the American people want to do potentially harm to American health, which would cost money?
First of all, I think the notion that you can't have environmental protection and a healthy economy presents a false dichotomy. So with respect to coal jobs in particular, removing these regulations, if they are in fact successful in doing that, and it's going to be years of litigation before we know that, but assuming that they are successful, it may bring back a small number of coal jobs. But I think the economics are clear that the main reason coal is suffering is that other forms of energy, including alternative energy, are more economically competitive. And good old-fashioned conservative principles are driving the market. So with or without a change in the law, I think a number of people, including many conservative economists, are skeptical that this will, in fact, bring back the old coal mining jobs in the way that the president seemed to contemplate.
The president talked about these Obama-era regulations being job-killing, basically saying his executive order would be taking the shackles off of businesses. Is that accurate?
Well, I think that depending on the business in question, the business community has different views about that. There are thousands of companies that feel that they're going to be directly harmed by continued inaction with respect to climate change. A number of companies filed joined briefs in support of the Obama-era regulations, a number of very major companies. So the business community is not speaking with one voice on this. And there are many, many major U.S. corporations that have come to the view that business really can't be done in a dystopian society and that it's just not good for business to have continued inaction on climate change.
I've talked to other people that have said, this actually could do just the opposite of what the president said as far as creating jobs, because it will make us less competitive when it comes to the wave of the future, which would appear to be clean energy. Do you agree?
I do. I think there are tremendous business opportunities out there, many of which are being driven by the market. But to the extent that the rollback of these regulations deters the emergence of clean energy, even to a small degree, it's going to hurt jobs. The largest source of job growth in the energy space now is in renewable energy by a very significant margin. And to the extent that it's harder to do that in the United States, other actors will step into the breach.
That's Jeff Gracer, partner at New York City-based law firm Sieve, Paget and Reisel. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Coming up, we've got some movie reviews, but first, turning to entertainment news, we're joined by Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. And Nicole, it's really ironic that this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month here in the U.S., and you've got news about one of the Spice Girls that's pretty upsetting along these lines. What's the story?
Mel B, Melanie Brown, also known as Scary Spice, is divorcing her husband of 10 years. His name is Stephen Belafonte. And she has been granted a temporary restraining order against him that will protect her and her three children, one of which is with her ex. She alleges that he abused her for all of the years of their 10-year marriage, and that he once she in court documents, she recounted a time when he beat her before a performance at the 2012 London Olympics. She was photographed with scabs and bruises on her body, and she claims that those scars and bruises came from him, but he forced her to tweet that she fell while running and wearing Christian Louboutin heels. She also claims that he forced her to have sex with other women and would videotape it and threaten to blackmail her and ruin her career by leaking the tapes. And she claims that he impregnated their nanny, forced that woman to have an abortion, and paid her off over $300,000. Not to mention the money that she alleges he stole from him, from her as well throughout their marriage. So it is a pretty sad situation for her. She is asking for full physical and legal custody of their 5-year-old daughter. He is totally refuting all of the allegations and saying none of it is true.
Wow. Well,
really
it's sad to hear about anything like that. Well, then we've got Alec Baldwin. Boy, he has really continued to just reinvent himself now on Saturday Night Live, impersonating Donald Trump and doing such a hilarious job of it. But he's in the news for something else. Many people may remember years and years and years and years ago, it seems like he said something that seems to have stuck with people, and I guess he's talking about it again.
Yeah, he was on Good Morning America this week, and he talked about this voicemail he left for his then 11-year-old daughter, Ireland Baldwin, where he called her a rude and thoughtless little pig. It was an angry voicemail. I believe it was around the time that he and ex-wife Kim Basinger were separating or they were going through something nasty, and it was very much in the public eye. And he said that calling his daughter a little pig has always haunted him. And it seems to be the one thing people can't forget. He called it a little scab that's never healed. And he admitted that it permanently has hurt his daughter, who's now 21. But I guess she's gotten over it, at least, because in 2015, she posted a pretty funny photo of her and her dad reading a book that said, "If I Were a Pig," that was the title of the book. And then her caption was, "I would be rude and thoughtless, of course." So I guess they can kind of laugh at it now, but I think he still feels that guilt for letting all of his rage out like that at her.
All right. Well, we're glad they made amends. Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us. And turning now to what's trending on social media, we're joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's the word today?
Well, Pepsi, the soft drink company, is in a bit of hot water on social media, getting a lot of backlash to an ad that they were running. Now, let me walk you through this commercial. It stars Kendall Jenner, model, social media star, member of the Kardashian-Jenner clan, known for keeping up with the Kardashians. And she's at a photo shoot when a group of protesters passes by, and they're holding up signs that say things like peace and love and other positive phrases. So as they pass by, Kendall Jenner walks away from her photo shoot. She pulls off the blonde wig that she's wearing, wipes away her makeup, and she joins them. And they approach a line of police officers who are standing blocking them off in the road. And she hands the police officer, who's standing guard, hands one of them a can of Pepsi. This ad is getting a lot of reaction on social media. Many people saying that it is tone deaf, that it is glamorizing protests, showing them as being fun and exciting and trying to use protests that have actually occurred, things like the Black Lives Matter movement, the Women's March, to sell soda. So not getting a lot of support for this ad. In fact, so much so that Pepsi has now announced that they're going to pull this ad.
Wow.
They initially had a statement where they said it was supposed to symbolize a moment of unity where people are coming together. That didn't last very long. So they've pulled the ad now, but people still very unhappy with this. Some people are defending it, saying, well, it was trying to be a lighthearted, you know, all these people coming together, all these different kinds of people coming together as part of this common cause. But by and large, that was not how it was seen on social media.
It's all a big gamble when you're putting together an ad like that, and you never know what the reaction's going to be.
Yeah, we see this a lot with social media because of its instantaneousness. These things get released, and instantly there's a backlash if people pick up on something. And oftentimes, I'm sure the people who created it didn't think it would ever receive that of backlash or get that kind of attention for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
Yet it does. And even in addition to being so quick, it's so intense, usually, the backlash, because of all of the people adding their voices through social media.
Okay. Well, what else is going on?
Well, a big change to how we watch television. We've had services like Hulu that have come out that allow you to bypass cable and watch your favorite shows on the internet. And now we have today the release of YouTube TV. Now, this is being released in select markets in the United States today. It's a streaming online TV service, $35 a month, much cheaper than a lot of cable packages here in the U.S. And what's big about YouTube TV is that it offers a lot of the channels that people give as reasons why they don't cancel their cable subscription. So it gives you broadcast networks, but also 24-hour news, live sports, movie channels. So this could be a big game changer. People cutting the cord, as they say, getting rid of their cable subscriptions and moving more towards this internet TV model. YouTube is certainly hoping that it's going to be a game changer and that they're going to have more people come on and use this service and they can go head to head with the cable companies. So this may be the wave of the future as far as how we watch TV. We might not be subscribing for cable, but we're instead subscribing to Hulu or YouTube or any one of the other services that are out there.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much. As always, you can follow him on Twitter at APOW. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Now let's turn to the latest movies opening in U.S. theaters, and for the most honest reviews we'll ever get, we're joined by Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hey, Jeff. So we're talking about Going in Style.
This is a remake of a late 70s film with George Burns and Art Carney, and this time we've got three of the most classic actors you could imagine, all in their twilight years, and this is like a perfect role for them. We've got Oscar winners Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine, and also Alan Arkin. They team up as lifelong buddies, Willie, Joe, and Al, who are in retirement, but of course they've been the straight and narrow their entire lives. But when their pension fund becomes a corporate casualty, they have to take drastic measures. They're going to lose their house. They're going into foreclosure. They have medical bills. They have all these things. So they are forced to rob banks. But not just any bank. They're not criminals. They just want their pension back that the bank stole from them, in their opinion. So they're desperate to pay their bills, so they have to come through by risking everything and knock off the very bank that took their money. Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Alan Arkin, and also Anne Margaret is in this movie, too. So it's just a virtual who's who. This wasn't really my cup of tea because the jokes were kind of like, making fun of the elderly, and they also have the guy who played Doc Brown from Back to the Future. Instead of, they made him kind of a forgetful kind of kooky kind of guy, but it didn't come across that way. It came across demeaning, I thought, to see something like that. So I didn't think the humor worked. It's absolutely not believable whatsoever, with robbing a bank and then trying to get away with it. It just didn't work. It really didn't. So Going in Style didn't go anywhere but down the toilet.
All right. Well, I can always count on you for honesty when it comes to your reviews. What about Boss Baby?
Well, you know what? I didn't want to mention this to you, Lori, but we've got trouble in up in heaven because they have a graph and a chart that says puppies are getting more love than babies. That's a big problem with babies. So up in heaven,
for who?
They don't send anyone to solve the problem. Any old baby, they send the boss baby. Okay. And this is he wears a suit. He speaks with the voice and wit of Alec Baldwin. And this is DreamWorks' new comedy under their new DreamWorks Animation banner. They broke off from doing live action films. They're just doing animation. This is their first one now. It's really imaginative. It really is, because you have it's all from the point of view of a 7-year-old boy named Tim, who the boss baby has to end up living with. And so it's heartfelt. It's got some great jokes for adults. It's got something for the kids. And, you know, I went in kicking and screaming because I thought, it's like when I saw, I was going to go see Zootopia, the Disney film from last year. I thought, my gosh, do I really want to see a movie about a bunny rabbit cop who solves crimes? And not only was Zootopia just like one of the greatest films of last year, but also one of the greatest animated films of all time, the Boss Baby's trailer doesn't do it justice, because you kind of roll your eyes and it looks corny. But when you get into the movie, it's much more than that. It's funny. It's heartfelt. Families will love it. And I was really surprised how much I enjoyed it. It was really funny.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks so much, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
I'm James Partey, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listener's mail segment. Just send your views to DaybreakAfrica@voanews.com. or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. officials have condemned the bombing in St. Petersburg, Russia, that has left at least 14 people dead and scores injured. The bomb, believed to be a homemade device filled with shrapnel, tore through a subway car April 3rd. A second explosive device reportedly was found at a nearby subway station, but it was disarmed by authorities. Russian President Vladimir Putin said all possible motives, including terrorism, are being investigated. No individual or group has claimed responsibility for the attack. At a lunch meeting in Washington with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, President Trump called the bombing in St. Petersburg terrible. White House spokesperson Sean Spicer said the United States condemns this reprehensible act of violence. Our thoughts and prayers are with the injured and with the Russian people as we extend our deepest condolences to the loved ones who have been killed and injured. Attacks like these on ordinary citizens just going about their lives remind us that the world must work as one to combat violence in all forms, he added. The United States is prepared to offer assistance to Russia that it may require in investigating this crime. State Department Acting Spokesperson Mark Toner issued a written statement also condemning the attack and expressing condolences to the loved ones of those killed and injured. U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations Nikki Haley, in a statement, called the images of lives lost and people injured in St. Petersburg heartbreaking. Ambassador Haley said, "The United States will stand with Russia on defeating these extremists who continue to senselessly harm innocent people."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what's